Welcome, everybody, to the Zion Experience. I'm Jim Shaw.
I forget Jordan.
Jordan Frank, the other co-host, is on.
I'm here.
You know, we really don't prepare for this.
You know, we're better off to come. About all you're going to get. That's what I got.
I have ham and cheese loaf in the refrigerator for days like today.
With that, let's get back into it.
Get in our groove. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the Zion Experience, or the TZE as we call it. Victoria's laughing because it's a pretty fun intro, isn't it, Victoria?
Yeah, it is.
we've had it out for about a year now, and it's always fun. Some people know what ham and cheese loaf is and some don't. So we may get into that. Are you a person that knows what it is or no?
I know what a ham and cheese sandwich is, but yeah. Not a ham and cheese loaf.
Just think it's mixed together. It's like little pieces of cheese inside the ham. So it's a ham and cheese loaf. Most people give the same face and reaction that you just did. So
I'm one of those people good. I don't like my food to touch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you may not like ham and cheese loaf, but anyway, if you all are welcome back to our guest, if you're a first time listener, welcome to the episode. We've got another exciting episode today in our supply chain leaders, our thought leadership series that we're doing. And we've got one of my favorite people and one of our partners and an extension of Zion's team. It's Victoria Carlton. And so Victoria is an experienced communications and marketing professional. She's got a strong background in the advertising industry. She's a founder and executive at Carlton Creative Company. And she combines strategic vision with creative insight to help businesses build authentic, lasting connections with their audiences. She's guided by a passion for helping others succeed, and she's equally committed to empowering her team members and fostering a culture of growth at her company, Carlton Creative Company. So, Victoria, that's just a little bit of your bio, but just for our listeners, I'll let you fill in any of the things that maybe you want to call out as part of that. I think it's a pretty cool bio, but Victoria's been in our life since Zion was started. We found each other through mutual friends and Marty Parker, and Victoria has been an extension of our team in a marketing capacity and a branding capacity and helping us connect to our audience for almost 4 years now. I'm going a little bit ahead there, but it's been three heading towards four, Victoria. So thank you for being on the show. Did I miss anything in the introduction about you that I could fill in?
It was perfect. I didn't even write that. I was wondering where it came from. It was really awesome. Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it. And that was such a kind introduction. We love partnering with Zion and working with you.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our audience? I got some questions. We'll go through them and we'll bounce around on them a little bit. The theme of this is thought leadership. We've been doing several different episodes on it. We wanted to get your perspective because I think you come at it from a different perspective than maybe some of the other people that we've had on. We've had practitioners, we've had partners, we've had some of our customers. And now from a more of the marketing, branding, advertising side of it, maybe you can explain how did Carlton Creative start? What does Carlton Creative do? And we'll get the audience primed up for some of our questions. So.
Yeah, sure. So I started Carlton Creative back in 2021 with the mission of helping our clients tell their stories authentically, which I think is very important because a lot of leaders are incredible leaders, but might not be comfortable sharing more about what they do and being able to really broadcast that to other people outside of their immediate team. So that was my main mission, was how can we work with clients and really help them feel comfortable, tell those stories, and make an impact for them.
Gotcha. And you're also a female-owned business, and that's pretty cool. And how big have you all grown to now, Victoria?
This year has been our biggest growth of any year. I'm very proud of that. So we have grown to a team of six people.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you all do a wonderful job. So we're glad to have you. Certainly, for the listeners out there, when Zion was formed, we knew one of the first things that we had to do was associate the founders, the people at Zion, with the new company name, the new brand. And so we spent a lot of time of what's the right colors, what's the right font, what's the, you know, designing the brand, and how do we get what are our marketing channels in terms of getting people associated to the new brand. And so we spent a lot of time the first year. I'm going to go back in history a little bit. You'll probably remember most of this, Victoria, is like we spent a lot of time just, who are we? What is Zion? What's our culture? Who are the people at Zion? What is that? And then we've gradually shifted more to, okay, well, here's who we are. And I think we did a really good job of people very quickly associated the leaders and the teammates at Zion with the new brand. And then and the culture we built, which is, I think, a really cool culture of just similar to you. You know, our purpose is to leave a positive impact on the lives of those we touch and to be very authentic in everything we do and deliver memorable experiences and guide intelligent change, all of the things that was foundational branding. And we've since kind of pivoted to, okay, that stuff's great, but here's what services we provide. Here's the technical expertise. Here's how we can help you. Here's how we can help customers with their problems. So it's been a great journey. It seems, I feel like I've had this conversation multiple times the last 2 weeks. Is 4 years has just kind of snuck up on me. And yeah, it's just gone, you know, it's gone like that. And it's been a lot of fun. And we couldn't do it without companies like you and partners like you and people like you and your team, Lauren, on here helping us along the way. And I think you did. Amelia probably told me this, but you all were on one of our very first episodes of the podcast too, I believe.
Yes.
You all were kind of the guinea pigs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Jimmy, in terms of what Zion's doing, I mean, kudos to the company for putting all of the things that you mentioned first, because I think it's really easy for new businesses to get caught up in just trying to say, all right, got to land the first client, got to start doing the first piece of work. But you and the other partners really, really took the time and effort to establish those values, who Zion was going to be, what it's going to look like, and making that an important first step. So I think that's a big part of the success too.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Let's talk some questions. Let's get into some leadership, some thought leadership. So in your perspective, what's the most important responsibility a leader has when they're building or growing this new brand or business? We've already kind of previewed this a little bit, but yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
I've been thinking about it, and I think this might be a little bit unique to me, but for me, it really all comes down to trying to lead with care. And I think a leader's most important responsibility is to make sure that their team feels supported and really seen and cared for. So, you know, not just when things are going well, but when things are especially stressful or uncertain. When people know that you have their back, and that's real, like you really truly care about them, I think they show up more creatively on our team. They have more confidence, they have resilience. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if your team feels like they're overlooked or undervalued, it won't matter at the end of the day. And leading with this is building trust. I feel that it's carrying a brand and business through any hard moments and the good moments too.
I think that's some really good advice, and I would agree with you. I mean, you've got to have foundational. One of my favorite books is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And the very base of that foundation is the trust. And if people don't think you care about them, if they don't know you care about them, if you don't establish that you care about them, it's hard to build upon that foundation. You can. Say it again. I'm sorry.
I said, yeah, it's the little things too and how you show up for them.
That's right. I agree. We totally off the subject, but we were talking. I don't think teams can be multiple things. We're talking about teams in the context of business, but I'm helping coach a little league football team. Wow. And they're little 9 and 10 year old boys, right? So they're young. They're just very, very easy to make an impression on. And we were playing a game, and we've got 3 or 4 of us to coach. I volunteered myself to coach. I wasn't really asked to coach, but I can't help myself. So I got in, I started helping coach, and I grew up with the other guys that are coaching as well. And so we had a bad game the week before, and we were given, one of the coaches was telling them, this is what I want you to do, and you got to do better, and you got to, you know, he was giving them the hard love. And I came in and told them, I said, you know what, guys, I just got one statement to tell you all. It's like, we believe in you all. We believe in you all. And I think people, whether you're 9 years old or whether you're a professional that's been starting your career, whether you're, you know, multiple years into your career, everybody wants, they need to hear that. And I think once you've established that I care about you, now you can really build it up. So what you say really hits home to me, because that's my style as well. As I said, I would much rather, probably to a fault, I spend too much time on making sure that the team knows I care, and I probably care too much. Honestly, it's probably a blind spot for me.
I think we're the same, truly, because that's feedback that I get a lot from others looking in sometimes, like, you're doing too much. And I'm like, no, I feel like I'm not doing enough for the team. And I like that role a lot.
Right. But that's maybe another transition. That's what we do in this podcast, is so you can, once you've established it, it's okay to, once these, back to the little boys, right? Once they knew and heard that all these adults that they're looking up to, their coaches, told them, you know, basically, we love you and we believe in you. Now you can tell them, now I want you to go do this, and you're not giving me enough, and you need to do more. And it's like, so there's certainly that transition to where caring establishes it, but then you got to go do business. And sometimes that doing business is leading them when, pushing them out of their comfort zone. And again, if you don't have that foundation, it's hard to get there. I've been with leaders that didn't build that foundation, and they expected that out of me, and they didn't get the best out of me sometimes. So I think it's a really good perspective and lens that you're looking at it through. So let's talk about next. I hadn't looked at the question, so hopefully we hadn't already answered all of them.
There's one that's very similar, and I'm excited.
Well, you just tell me that you tell me. Okay, let's build on it. You can help me out. You've looked at the question. So, common mistakes when you see leaders that you see leaders making when they're communicating with their teams, and maybe some strategies to avoid it. Maybe some things that you do that would help others not have to go through the same pain and learnings that maybe you have.
Yeah. I mean, I really think one of the biggest mistakes leaders can make is transferring their stress onto the team, because when you're the owner or you're the partner really trying to manage clients and expectations, you can feel the stress from other clients that are being shifted onto you, or it might just be in your nature. I'm a workaholic for sure. So I think I always read into situations and try to say, how can this be better or faster? And it's stressful sometimes. And I want to make sure that my team doesn't feel that. So it might be like, I might not share the more stressful things with them because it's not worth the energy to then upset them too, or make them feel like things aren't stable when certainly they are. And that's not the case. I just sometimes need that own outlet. So I have to figure out other ways to communicate that. But I think if you don't make things hectic and stressful, it produces clarity in a way where people can move forward and keep working without feeling like they're stuck in something and fearing the next step.
I think you hit a strong word. There's the clarity of it. And you're right. You know what, when you're a leader and you communicate, we've said this, or I've said it, others have said, it's like our words are like 100-pound words. So when we say something, the way they're interpreted, you can't just have the casual conversations. You can't just relay the stresses of the week, the quarter, the year, the whatever on, because when you sit in that seat, what you say has a big ripple across it. And I've done that. I've had to learn that. It's been a new learning for me, is because I'm just like, I see myself as part of the team. Yeah, I know I've got a title. Yes, I know I'm an owner, but I don't place myself in there in terms of, like, that's not how I interact with the team, and you work for me, and you're, you know, what I say goes, and I'm the know all be all. But I've learned, I walked in, this is 2 years ago, and I was trying to be helpful, and I asked a question, and then I went and got on an airplane, and the work that it turned into for three or four people, I got a call afterwards, and like, is this what you meant to do? And it was like, absolutely not. But I didn't clearly communicate what I was asking. And I'd done a site visit with a local job, and I saw something, and it was a little concerning. And I said, have you all thought about this? Has anybody looked into it? Well, guess what they did after I left and got on the plane? That's all they did the rest of the day. And it got about three people involved in trying to solve. And that wasn't the intention. So I think as a leader, you're right. Clarity is certainly a strategic advantage. The same guy that wrote The Five Dysfunctions of the Team wrote a book, and it was all about clarity. It's Patrick Lencioni. Have you read any of Patrick's books?
I haven't read any of those, but I guess I'll have to now that I keep citing the same thing.
he is like Five Dysfunctions of the Team. Like I don't know what they call them now, but do the short version of it, and you can get it or look.
Oh, the Cliff Notes.
I've got an article that'll show you it and kind of give you it all in one. It's a really powerful book from a team perspective. And then he followed it up with The Advantage, and The Advantage was organizational clarity and how you clearly communicate. And I can't sit here and say I'm the best at it. I things are super clear in this head of mine. They're swirling all around. And if Amelia would come off camera for a minute, she'd be like, yep, you got some stuff going on there, and it's all over the place. And we have to get back down to when it here's what needs to be done. Cause it's just part of it's how you think, but you're right. You can't stress it. You can't push it down. How do you think you are as a leader in that? Are you on a scale of 1 to 10, is Victoria like in the top of the bracket, or are you like me and somewhere I'm like, I'm a 5 and I'm 30 years into this and I'm trying to get towards the 10.
Oh my gosh, Jimmy. I think we're so similar in so many of our leadership styles where I can recognize that I do that. And I try to really not share those types of things with the team that might be bothering me or something that I'm thinking about. It's all about the delivery. You're right. And I never thought about it as our words are 100-pound words, because I'm very much the same. Like, I'm the team. I'm not an owner. Like, sure. Yes. Like, that's just a title that's not important to me in my everyday work. And I want to be a part of the team and helping everybody move forward faster and better and more efficient. But you're right. Like, you just have to take a step back sometimes. So my ranking, I don't know, maybe a 6 or a 7, because I care about the team. They would give me a 7, but I'm giving myself a 6 because I should hold back more than I do sometimes. But, you know, it's a constant check and balance.
Yeah, I think it's an evolution of, and you got to find, you know, you said the word authentic, and you come back and you got to find out the people that work for you, and we'll go. Can you hear me now? I've got a ghost that the plug here just it trips. I don't know why. I've got a laptop hooked up to it, and I've got this microphone hooked up to it, and that's it. But it trips every once in a while. So it's never done it right in the middle of a podcast. But look at that, quick recovery. So
at least you knew exactly what it was, and you could address the problem immediately.
I heard it click, and then I'm like, oh man. Anyway, so back on our train of thought. So I was saying, like, the people that work for you probably love that about you. And the thing about a leader that if you too many leaders, I don't see Victoria as having a big ego, a big CEO, a big ownership ego. And I think we are similar. It's not how everybody's got some level of that. You got to have a little bit to be able to own your own business, to be an entrepreneur, to have the steel and the resolve to lead through the challenges of just having a small business, because it isn't easy. But the people that work for you, they probably love that about you. I think where it comes into play is as you scale an organization, there's certain things as you transition out. We've certainly learned that. I've been part of integrators that were our size. I've now been part of one that started from 4 or 5 people, but I joined the previous one at 20 people, and we scaled it almost to 100 plus, and things evolve and skills change. And as you grow, and can you imagine having a 40,000 person company, how you sit in that space and communicate as a leader and do different things. I think they're different, but it's very true. I'd leave you with their 100-pound words. They it only gets worse as 6 goes to 12, as goes to 18, and they just really are. And it's a good thing about it, But the other piece that I've learned over time is the, we've said this on a couple of the others, is like people don't typically fill voids with good things. All humans fill voids with, like, our nature is, oh, there's something bad, or, oh, there's a misunderstanding. And I think as we've gotten more rely more on electronic communication, it only makes that harder because you don't have the face-to-face. You aren't in the office together. I know most of your team's remote. And if you'd have told me this 10 years ago, I'd have been like, I don't think it's as big a deal as it is. But today, it's if you could have everybody in the same office, you can just move so much faster. You can communicate so much more clearly than over email or over text message or over even over a phone call, because you just can't see certain things and how you're trying to communicate it. And if you're not a super articulate communication, then it just creates some of those voids. And most people don't fill them with, like, oh yeah, benefit of the doubt. Well, they didn't mean that. And so yeah. I've learned that. That's my progress I've tried to make over the last year of, like, being more clear, because it's super clear in my head, but the words that I put down and how it's communicated out and the number of times people have to see it.
Yeah.
And hear it is it's an ever evolving need. So
it is. And just to build on one small thing that you said, and it's so important, is I use audio messages a lot. I feel like that has gotten me farther than anything, because we all have deadlines or things going on. And when I want to talk to teammates, I don't want to send a message that is typed out, because that can be read in 100 different tones, like infinite possibility of how I meant a sentence to sound or feel for somebody. And so utilizing audio messages has been a real game changer, I think, because, you know, somebody doesn't want to have a phone call at that moment. They just want to get a quick answer. They don't want to continue talking through something else. But sending a quick audio message, 30 seconds, a minute long, I think has really helped inject that heart into it. So someone can say they're not filling the void with the bad stuff of reading it, right? They're actually hearing it.
I love that. That's maybe the best thing in the podcast so far, Amelia. So we'll have to remember that. This might be the clip. So we're talking about communicating as a leader. How are some mistakes that maybe you see leaders make, and just how that can they be avoided? And we talked. I'm recapping a little bit because I think it'll make a good clip, Victoria. But I just learned something, because I'm going to ask you a follow-up on it. But how do you get clarity? What methods do you use to communicate with your team? How important communication is? And so Victoria just shared that one of the things that she uses has been audio messages. And I know there's several different ways. You can do it on your phone through a text message, I guess, probably what you do. There's Loom. There's different software out there to where you can even put the face to it. You could do a video audio message, right? But what do you find useful? Are you using just a text and just taping your voice and sending it that way, or?
Yeah. So we use Slack, and okay. I know Microsoft might have something similar with Teams, but on Slack, I can send an audio message. That's just a quick snippet of me speaking like a text, but instead of like a text message, it doesn't disappear. I think that's the hardest part about iPhone audio messages, is they disappear if you don't tape them.
Yeah.
And also I try to be super respectful of those boundaries of, like, all right, that's your personal cell phone. I'm not going to send a bunch of work messages over there, and keeping it over on Slack. So they feel like they can always come back if maybe I texted them at the wrong time, if it's on the iPhone versus Slack. But that's the first and foremost thing I like to do a lot is audio messages. I love receiving them back. And I think by me leading with that, it makes people more comfortable, because something that I'm seeing with younger people is they don't like to be on the phone. And if I call somebody, they think something's wrong. Like, phone calls are used for emergencies nowadays, right? I mean, I grew up, and I still get it to this day. My dad calls me 3, 4, 5 times a day just to say hello and check in. Nothing's an emergency at all. But even I get it sometimes. I'm like, oh, he's calling me again. I got to answer. But it's just like this new cultural norm of how we're viewing phone calls. But I'd love to hear what you think.
I think I just had like a light bulb go off of this audio message, and I'm going to try it. And I wouldn't have tried it. It's there in front of me. and it wouldn't have been a form of communication. I haven't done a lot of it. I know the audio mess. You got to save it. Showing my age a little bit. I'm starting to get up, but it's like, I know you can save it, but to keep, or it just disappears on your, on, I've got an iPhone. I'm sure it's similar on Androids, but I think it's a wonderful another way to communicate, and I wouldn't have thought of it. So I hope our listeners that get it, it's like somebody's going to listen to this and try that. I'm certainly going to try it. What was the other? I had another thought I was going to tell you. Oh, maybe another one back to you is I'm really bad. My work, we went two things. One, we went through an exercise at our Pinnacle strategy meeting as an executive group. We meet once a quarter and we go through it. One of the exercises we did is, what's the best time to communicate to you? Or what's the best, not time, what's the best method to communicate to you? And then what are your best working hours? And I think the workplace is evolving with the different generations that we have in it. Victoria, to your oh, point, yeah. It's like my parents are 9 to 5 and there was an order to life, and I'm kind of in the middle of it. They call my generations really, we know how the baby boomer generation managed people. And then I know how the millennials, and now you've got the other generations coming in. So I think it's really evolving. But we went through the exercise, like, what's the best way for me to communicate to you? If you like text, I'd rather send you text. And to your point, if you call somebody, I'm terrible on the phone. If you leave me a voicemail, I may never get it. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm just not. So one of the things I always try to do with a new group of people I'm leading or part of their team on is I ask them, how do you like to communicate? So I think you're right. I wouldn't have thought of audio, but I'm going to give it a try. So
I hope awesome. You send me one. Maybe I'll send you one afterwards.
I think you have, but yeah, try sending one and just, I'm going to try it. So Amelia better be looking out. I'm like, Amelia, this is my first attempt at, it's about how I started my LinkedIn career, Victoria, where it's, hi, I'm Jim Shaw. And would you follow me on LinkedIn? But Anyway, I think it's just about evolving as a leader. I think it is a more personal way, because I've really been the last 2 to 3 weeks. It's been on my mind, like, how do you connect remote teams more? We're a service-based team. Mm-hmm. We're only as good as our team. We're only as good as our partners. And everybody's – it's just so impersonal of just getting on and doing video conferences. It's great. It's great that people don't have to travel and be away from their families. It's great that you can have talent spread all over the country. But there's a connection there of one of the things that our people and culture, director of people and culture, and I spoke to about last week was like, how do we get the team more connected knowing we can't be in person every day? And this might be one of those ways. It's just, it's small things. It's small things that do it.
It is small things, and it makes you feel more connected and like you know that person better if you're not reading something. And this is, I mean, the tools are evolving so fast, but one of the other things I love about the audio message is Slack is actually already speeding it up. So, and cutting out the silences when somebody's like thinking through their words. And it's not like it takes more time to listen to an audio message. It's a huge benefit, I think, in so many ways.
I'm going to definitely try it. So send me, we don't have Slack. We do use Teams, but I'm sure Teams has something very similar to it. And we'll use
it. I'll send you one of the text message style ones.
There you go. Tell me what a great podcast this was and how good the host was and everything. No, I'm kidding.
I definitely will.
Before we, I know we're spending a lot of time on this one. I think one other thing, just yours, one of the talking about leaderships and how you communicate and keeping stress off of our team. One of the things my brain never shuts off. It doesn't shut off. I answered, like, I'm probably most alive in the morning, but my brain just never really shuts off. There's really a balanced work in life. But when you're a small business, when you own a business like we do, it's just, you just never walk away from it. And I'm okay with it, because I've found the balance that works for me and my family. But one of the things that I was doing that I think it bleeds down to your team, that I've a new technology that I've used more, is I would send an email, something's on my mind, and I might not get the emails till 11 o'clock at night.
And I just, this is such a good one, Jimmy.
Bang it out. Or it might be 1 o'clock in the morning. I wake up and I'm just like, shh. And so now I don't even know if I've shared with the team. I think I have some, but I use snooze a lot to schedule an email instead of sending it at 7 o'clock. Cause my expectation is not that they're like me, that they're, if they want to do that, that's great. We're pretty open, but I don't want the team to think you have to carry it home. And a lot of times I'm settling down with Holly and we'll be watching TV and talking and catching up. And I usually will get an hour or 30 minutes of work in and we're talking and I'll schedule emails out. So that's really helped me because I think as a leader, people, whether you like it or dislike it, people end up mimicking what you do and how you do things and in both good and bad. And I know that was one of the things that my team said it. They never directly told me, but they've told me over the years. It's like, hey, you must not have been able to sleep last night. And so it's helped me a lot. Do you find yourself using anything else like that? Or is that another thing we have in common? You're up at
Jimmy,
1 o'clock.
I think we're the same person. I just can't believe how much we have in common. I am the same way. I have a really hard time turning off my brain and I don't expect other people to be like that. I think of it as like, I've been flexing it all day long, like flex, flex, flex. And then when it comes to turn it off, like it's really hard for me to like release and let that go. And yeah, it is sometimes me sending emails at night after hours, especially me being in Phoenix right now and 3 hours behind the East Coast. So I schedule so many messages, except we have one person on the team talking about meeting them where they're at in their working hours. Robin on our team is a night owl. So she actually works until 2, 3 a.m. most nights. So I won't schedule things to her because I know she wants it immediately, but everyone else I schedule it the next day. And I think they know I'm scheduling it now because I'll schedule it for something that's appropriate, like 8 a.m. Eastern, but that's 5 a.m. by me. So they'll say, oh, she was working on this yesterday. And yeah. Scheduling just, it takes away that sense of urgency and pressure because yes, they mimic you, but it's also, they think that something is super important and they have to stop what they're doing at that time and day or night in the middle of the night to then do that. And I don't want to create that or cultivate that on the team. I want them to know that I can respect those boundaries and I won't ping them with any notifications unless it is utterly important or an emergency.
Right. Well, that goes back to your thing. It's that phone call. Like if you get an email from, if somebody gets an email from me at 7 o'clock at night, it's like, oh, the president sent me something and I don't want that. It's not, I may just be trying to tell them something because that's when I had the opportunity to deal with it because something else through the day. But I've also used some language in place. Like I share with the team, like if you see for your information, it's just for awareness. Because that's my style. I like to see and be aware. Not everybody likes to get a lot of emails. So again, back to your conversation. If you're joining this, we spent a lot of time on this question, but I think it's important to say you have to understand your team. It's important you have clarity. Understand as the leader, like you're viewed differently. Your words are 100-pound words. Your messages can drive urgency that's not intended urgency, and then find a good method of ask your team how they want to be communicated with. And then as a leader, kind of evolve to them instead of expecting everyone to evolve to your style. So I think there's some really good wisdom there. Yeah.
And I just have to mention scheduling text messages on iPhone. Oh, it's amazing.
Another game changer. I didn't know it. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not even using that for, you know, communication with the team. I use that 9 times out of 10 for client reminders. So, you know, we have in-person events and I'm sending a quick text because they're not checking their email when they're at an event. And it's like, hey, don't forget to take photos today. Or, hey, don't forget that you have this deliverable to send or meet with the photographer, whatever it is. It's awesome. And I think it's such a great way to just quickly ping somebody when, you know, maybe the meetings don't align or the times don't align.
We are the same person because I found somebody showed me you can do that and it's not intuitive on your iPhone. So if you've got it, you gotta hold down on it and put plus and then schedule later. It's not intuitive, but I'm up at night and I want to send something in the morning to somebody and it's too early to send it to a customer or client, but I want them to get it. I'll forget about it. I've got too many things swirling in the head. And I tell you, the other one on the phone is the, a text, somebody sends it, and once you read it, it just used to go away. Well, now you can leave it unread, and I use it as a filter system. I can filter my unread ones out because I'm not going to respond to it, but I know if I don't leave it unread, I'll forget about it. And just forget about it. So
I do the same thing with emails too. That's my style of priority, is it stays unread. Like I'll read it, I'll know what it is, but until I have time to thoughtfully respond, it stays unread.
I snooze a lot. My problem is I use the snooze feature a lot and schedule them to come back later. And I have probably about 60 to 80 that roll every single week. That's just rolling there. That just, because if I leave them in there, I'll forget about them. Anyway, as a leader, you're hearing this, you're finding there's some different techniques. I think the good out of it is find where your team's at and meet your team where they're at. And they need to meet you a little bit where you're at as well, but understand there is urgency in how you communicate. There has to be clarity. And whether you like it or not, and you're a leader out there, that your message just carries a little different weight sometimes. So avoid those mistakes, but some really good stuff there. So let me ask you one more question. We're getting close to time. Let me see which one I want to ask you. Let's do this one. What's a leadership lesson you've learned from another entrepreneur or business partner that's influenced your own approach?
I think this is so well tied to everything we've been talking about, but one of the most valuable lessons by far I've learned is not to micromanage. I mean, this goes back to our earlier conversation too. It's like in the beginning, I thought that, you know, it meant having everything in order, having a hand in every single thing you do to be a great leader, you know, reviewing all of the details, every single deliverable and approving things and just being involved. And I think you've seen that too with Zion. Is what I realize is when you control everything, you're actually slowing the team down and I'm not helping people make progress. And I need to remove myself from those ways and trust the team. We have a very detailed way of working at CCC and super clear expectations around how we're all going to operate. And those are non-negotiables for me, but creating that framework and giving it to the team empowers them to feel ownership and feel like they're producing their own ideas and they can take initiative and care about the outcome because they're more invested instead of me micromanaging each little step.
Gotcha. That's cool. I think like you is I'm an engineer, so I've got control. There's control things going on this side of the podcast. But there's some balance of, I love to have the one-to-one relationship with the team or my direct reports because I care about them and I care about what's going on. But sometimes that can turn into you become the bottleneck, or you catch all the things that are going on. And so there's some balance there. And again, like everything else in my life and my leadership journey is, I think you make micro adjustments based on the team that you have around you. But ultimately, as a leader, you set the vision, you set the direction, you set the non-negotiables. You have to lead with clarity. Mm-hmm. And then you got to get out of the way and you got to let people do their job. I was listening. You probably know, have you heard of the newsletter, the company Beehive?
Yes.
Yeah. The guy, so he sends out a blog weekly. It's a pretty cool blog. If you're a blog person, I get several blogs and he's one that I usually read. I usually go through it and glance through it, but he had interviewed another founder, of a company. And that founder said, what makes you think as a CEO that you should hire somebody? This was something a CEO does wrong. He said, if you're a CEO and you hire somebody as a COO and you have to train that person, like you're not qualified to train them. And if you find yourself training them, then you've made the wrong decision and you're the wrong person in the CEO seat and you've hired the wrong person. You got to hire great people and let go great people go do what they do well. So I think you're right. I'm a work in progress on it. I know I am. And as you scale and you get bigger, I came from UPS to where there was all this corporate structure to much smaller businesses and where you kind of got to wear multiple hats. And so it's a balancing act, but.
Mm-hmm. And you want to, at the end of the day, no matter what I do, I just want to create an environment where talented people can thrive and really deliver value for our clients on the team.
I think you're doing a great job at that. I think you've got a great team. I've not got access to the entire team because obviously we work with a section of your team, but certainly for us, we've had, you know, it's not a micromanage. It's hey, what do you want to get done? What's your direction? What are your goals? And then let's go work on it. And I think your team also does well when it's not in their skill set, and not in a bad way, but it's not their subject matter expertise. And Zion does this as well. You all are like, that's not like, let's find someone else to help us with this void, this soft spot. And because Zion doesn't have it, maybe Carlton, but let's collaborate on how we go find someone else to help us fill that space. I think that's extremely important when you're a service-based company and you're providing value for other companies. Because we get it. I told a customer last week, Victoria, we were there and they asked me about two or three things. I'm like, we're not best at that. I'm not trying to be best at that. So there's power in saying no. And now I've got companies that I know that are good at that. That's all they do. So let's bring them to the table and let them help you with that. So, well, I've really enjoyed this. Is there anything I didn't hit that you'd like to hit before I go to? We got a potential fun. We got fun questions we get to ask you, but is there anything?
I think it was all an incredible conversation. I love talking about leadership with you, and I love to find how we're so aligned in our similar styles.
I'm not sure it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we would have to ask our team for that, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Well, thank you for the time. Let's go to one of these fun questions, and let me see if there's any. If you could have dinner with any historical figure or business leader, who would you have dinner with?
That was not on my list, Jimmy, but I got a good one based upon what I had written down. I am a huge fan of Steve Irwin and everything that he injected into the world, that empathy, that happiness. I think we need more people like him. And if I could just have a conversation with him, that would be so incredible. And that answer comes from, I was going to tell you how much I love Dancing with the Stars, and his son is currently on it. And he seems like just a spitting image of him. And I love people who care and are so genuine and authentic in everything they're doing. So getting a chance to meet with somebody like that could be so valuable, and really trying to energize myself and keep bringing that to the table for everyone else.
Yeah. He had an energy that just came out, just poured out of him. Right. I haven't followed. I saw his son was on it and they lost their pet pig, or I saw some news about it, but I don't watch Dance with the Stars. I don't watch a lot of TV, but both his daughter and him have carried on in what Steve was doing. And I just remember his personality. He was a guy. It's like, I would love to be next to him. It's infectious. It's, you know, the energy that came out of him. That's a good one. I wouldn't have thought of that. So I'm going to ask you two, since you don't have any questions, just to put you on the spot, but do you got a book or a podcast or a show or anything that you've recently enjoyed that you think our listeners would enjoy doing?
You know, I think branching out into other cultures, other languages. I watch a lot of two things with my husband. It's his passion is we watch a lot of anime, which is all in Japanese. So I read it in English. That's been incredible just to immerse yourself into another language. And I can actually like pick up Japanese words now. And then another one we watch a lot of is Korean reality TV shows, and learning about, you know, what's presented on a reality TV show for Korean culture is so different from American. And I feel like I learn a lot of lessons there, even in leadership styles, because they're competing, but they compete with grace against each other. And the way that they speak is very different than our ideals or culture of, I got to be first, I got to be on top, I'll do anything to beat this other person. And that's not how it is at all on those types of shows. So I think it's really beautiful. And it makes me always step back like, wow, I got to keep remembering, put other people first. And like, that's how rising tides raise all boats, right? That's how you get to the top.
It's awesome. I've never watched anime. I did visit Japan this year. I was there for 10 days. I'll have to tell you about that another time, but
audio message.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, we've reached the end. Greatly appreciate you. I think it's been a fun conversation to all our listeners out there. We appreciate you all. Hopefully you've listened and gained something. I certainly did this episode, and, We look forward to you. If you aren't subscribed, then please go subscribe. And Victoria, thank you. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with us. I always try to do this less than 45 minutes, and I always fail, but it's just interesting conversation as you get going. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
We want to thank you all for listening to another episode of the Zion Experience. Please make sure you subscribe to our show on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcast. If you have any ideas or topics you'd love to hear about or maybe for a future episode, please let us know. Send us something in the comments. We appreciate you all, and we'll see you here next time.